Red Grange joined us immediately after his last collegiate game against Ohio State.
Yeah. And you say Shot City.
I'm coming home again.
Quick pitch to Walter, looking for the record, cuts back, he's got it, he's out of it at 25.
The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
You know, they say that money calling, that money on the phone.
Forget it. Nobody's going to get them. Long gone. Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Bears on Tap, a podcast about the 4-1 Chicago Bears. You can follow us at Bears on Tap or follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. I'm Lucas Perfetti. You can follow me at LucasPerfetti46. We also have on That Pod Guy Duke Coughlin, and Beat on 300, Brandon Suarez. Today we're going to do a little bit of rundowns. We're going to talk about maybe these trade rumors, Lev Bell rumors. We're actually going to start the show with this Minnesota-Seattle decision at the end of the game. That seems to be pretty controversial. And then, of course, we have our Panthers preview, which low-key, the Panthers are an all right team. Looks like they are starting to figure things out. It's weird how Christian McCaffrey goes down and then they start winning. But, gentlemen, how we doing?
I'm good. Just honestly, dude, it's kind of sucked not recording last week. Like I kind of feel like we were all on timeout. I'm such in like the routine of like filming or recording like so many times during the week with you guys. Like just kind of, I mean, it was nice to be away from you for a while, Perfetti. I'm not going to lie, but, you know, besides that, I kind of missed B-Don a little bit, but yeah, man, feeling good. It was kind of nice to watch football on Sunday and not really have anything too far in the stake with it, obviously, cause I'm not a better yet legally cause I live in Wisconsin, but, yeah, man, I do want to do a big shout out to Dak Prescott, dude. That was a tough thing to watch. Very emotional. I've always been a huge Dak Prescott guy. You know, he's gotten dragged over the last few years for one reason or another, but I've always kind of really stuck with that guy and watched. I ended up watching a lot of it by proxy with my girlfriend being a Cowboys fan. She was also devastated by it. Dude, can't say enough about Dak Prescott, dude. I really hope if anyone can come back from recovery like this, it's going to be that guy.
Yeah. Actually, sorry to cut you off, B-Don, but Dak Prescott is, if we're talking about trade rumors and stuff like that and free agency rumors, Dak Prescott, two top places for him to end up after he recovers, because by every report, he should be back. It was dislocated and fractured. So it just realistically looked way more horrific than it was, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of recovery. Like, you know, I think a lot of us went to the Alex Smith thing right away and we're like, fuck, is this it for Dak? But it seems like he had a successful surgery and he's going to be able to come back. But yeah, the Bears are rumored to get him in free agency, but go ahead, B-Don.
Yeah, it was a good victory Sunday. I got acquainted with NFL Red Zone, which I now have in my apartment. So I honestly, for like an hour long period, it just kept flipping to people on my fantasy team doing good stuff. So that was pretty cool to see, because normally I'm just watching the Bears game, but one guy it kept flipping to, and you guys, you know, you give me a microphone to talk, I'm going to say it. Four touchdowns from Chase Claypool, bro, on Sunday. Come on now, kid. Chase Claypool got after it on Sunday. You absolutely love to see it. Now, like I said, I was on Red Zone, so that's how I saw it. But other than that, like Duke said, it was nice to not have a heart attack and acquire at least like three patches of gray hair on a Sunday. Order some takeout, watch a movie, like, did some normal people stuff. It wasn't all football all day. I still had it on the second screen, and there was some good games. And like you said, Lucas, we'll get into one of those games here real quick.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, speaking of Chase Claypool, he did ball. And I know that's a guy for B-Don. Shout out to Irish on Tap. Obviously, B-Don runs that over there. If you're a Notre Dame fan, go ahead and check it out. But Chase Claypool balled. And I said it like to Brandon and a couple other of my friends, to me, Chase Claypool reminds me of the DK Metcalf of this year. Like, he had no business being drafted that late. We actually stated on this podcast before Duke was a part of it, actually, we were talking about the draft. I thought Chase Claypool, with how he performed at the combine, was going to bump him into the first round. But again, you know, 2 years back to back with a pretty deep wide receiver class, he fell and he caught four touchdowns. You know what I mean? And like, to talk about, like, I just think the similarities in their gameplay and stuff like that. I think Chase Claypool is actually a little bit more able to go sideline to sideline and less just like go routes. But at the end of the day, they're bullies, both guys. And we saw DK Metcalf catch a game winning touchdown. Russell Wilson went to dude seven times at the end of that game. But let's backtrack to what happened before that game winning drive. Mike Zimmer going for it on fourth and one. I mean, what do you guys think of it? Because I want to give my opinion, but go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, don't give your opinion. So correct me if I'm wrong.
You're a Jaguar.
The play they ran was like between the tackles, was it not?
Yeah, I think there was an ability to bounce it outside.
Yeah, like he could have bounced it outside. Yeah, I don't know. Without Dalvin Cook and the way Alexander Mattison was performing, I can see why Zimmer did that. But at the end of the day, like, Russell Wilson, with any glimmer of hope and time with the weapons that he has, and a lead that is a dagger lead, like, if they score, it's a wrap. And it came down to fourth and goal for Russ. I mean, they still got the job done. Cha-ching, cha-ching for the live bettors. But I just really feel like in that situation where the Vikings were in their season, they were talking about like the Vikings, like do or die earlier in the game, even before that situation, like Collinsworth and Michaels were. So I can see why it was called, but me, myself, I'm going in and I'm kicking a field goal. And if we got to go to overtime, it is what it is.
Dude. Yeah, man, I'm kind of in the same boat. I would have sent my kicker out there. You know, at the end of the day, you pay your kickers to make those kicks. I mean, obviously the rain was coming down in Seattle, which I think kind of played a little bit of a role in that decision. But come on, you gotta trust your special teams. You gotta trust your kicker to make that kick. And if he can't make that kick, I mean, Dan Bailey, I believe that's a kicker.
Oh, it was a chip shot. He would have made.
Yeah,
it.
And it's a guy Dan Bailey, who's definitely made those kicks plenty of times in his career.
They were at their own 6 yard line, I believe. So it was literally like pretty much an extra point from back in the day. But no, I have to argue on the opposite side, because just what you guys were kind of saying about Russell Wilson, you know, Duke's holding up the W, big Wisconsin guy. Russell Wilson, he had to go 96 yards and he did it effortlessly. They didn't use a timeout until they decided to call timeout at the end to like configure a play. Like they didn't, it was after an incomplete pass. They called a timeout to like come up.
He found your guy in the end zone on the literal last chance that they had to get a touchdown.
I mean, I think it went a little bit Superman meme over your head. I went from Chase Claypool to DK Metcalf. I made that comparison so we could have a smooth transition, Jag. But at the end of the day,
it was smooth until you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, because B-Don had to call it out. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, I want to.
Hey, man, just let me be great with my four touchdowns. He probably hit his season total over in one game.
Probably, no joke. But no, at the end of the day, like, I feel like the Minnesota Vikings' best chance, like, if Matt Nagy were to do that, I wouldn't crush him for it in a situation like that. Because realistically, I think Russell Wilson, with three timeouts and them being up 8 points, I think they go down and score, and then they kick the 2-point conversion, and then you just drag out the Minnesota. Like, I think they're winning in overtime, realistically. I think their best chance is to get that yard. They converted on both of their fourth downs before that, and they literally ran for over 200 yards in that game. The Seattle Seahawks defense is garbage, but Russell Wilson is fucking insane. Go ahead, B-Don.
Couple things. Seattle Seahawks defense is confirmed garbage. Unless we're bringing Doug Flutie back from the grave, I don't think we can kick a 2-point conversion. I don't think the drop kick's involved.
You get what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying. They're making the 2-point conversion, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
no,
I think that they're going down and scoring regardless. So I think the best way to win that game against Russell Wilson's or Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, is like you have to convert there. You convert there, you make them waste all their timeouts, and you possibly
no doubt.
Like, I mean, I think that's the best way of winning that game. Don't get me wrong, it backfired. You know what I mean? Like, revisionist history. If you can kick the field goal and have 8, who knows if they if you, you know, gut one out and get the 2-point conversion, you know, you like stop them, but I think they still win. I think that's their best chance of winning.
I got one more, and it's going to make you cringe, but I mean, if they threw Cordarrelle Patterson up the middle on 4th-and-1, Bears Twitter would erupt.
That's when I would kill. Yeah, that's when I would bury him for that then.
Fucking crazy.
Not the decision, the play call.
So the only flip side, I guess, and we can kind of move on from it, but the only flip side of that was kind of how we made the comparison earlier in the before the show about how Tampa kind of didn't have really much respect for our offense. Well, what does it kind of say to your defense of the Vikings by going for it on 4th-and-1 when you can go up 8 points and have a chance of them actually stopping or possibly holding to a tie? You know, that's a defensive-minded head coach is kind of what makes that entire situation a little confusing. And a guy like Harrison Smith, I guarantee you, was not loving that decision either.
Well, there goes Duke swinging his meat like the pendulum straight up, bringing it back, because I didn't think about that reverse aspect of it. But I just think, dude, Russell.
No, and you've got
beautiful assist, though, because they're consoled in the division. GG, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, I love every bit of that. I mean, and you're right, Lucas. I mean, it's hard to do that. It's kind of like the Aaron Rodgers effect we had to deal with, like mid-2010 Aaron Rodgers, just where he was just fucking outrageous and you give him any glimmer of hope, you know. But you got to – I just really feel like you have to at least give yourself a fighting chance with it with – you don't give up the tie and go to overtime, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that's better than just giving him a chance to take the lead, you know.
Yeah, it does seem out of character for someone like Zimmer. That's something I will say. It would have made a lot more sense if it was Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy or John Harbaugh, someone like that, Sean Payton, John Gruden. Mike Zimmer isn't really
such a fat rat.
But at the end of the day, glasses. Like they need to, like, I think their playoff hopes are done, but I know Duke was crushing me for this in the group chat, but I really think like the Vikings are starting to put it together. You know what I mean? And I feel like because we play them so late in the season that they're going to be the type of team that you can't just be like, oh, they're the fucking team that Aaron Rodgers and who else put 40 on them back-to-back weeks. Like, I don't think they're that team anymore. They actually, for how good that Seahawks offense is, like, they played decent throughout the game, that defense.
Yeah.
They're a young team, too. So, I mean, that should be expected. But they have a lot of talent, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I kind of just saw it more as Seattle playing down to their opponent more than Minnesota really kind of playing up. It feels like, you know, and dude, we have to be worried if it's fucking Detroit. You know what I mean? We have to be worried about any division opponent. That's just kind of the NFC North. You know what I mean? Any sort of stupid situation, dude, what the Lions were 0-15 and they almost beat the Packers to go 1-15 in the last game of the year. You know what I mean? Like,
and you bring up a good point about playing down to the competition, because Seattle played like a weird game against the Dolphins too this year. I think it was the week before. So it's a strange game, a game you thought that they were going to absolutely throttle them. And it was like 11-18 at one point or something, some weird score like that. But let's move forward to some of these rumors. The most specific one, and we're recording Tuesday night. This happened a few hours ago, realistically. Le'Veon Bell just got flat out released by the Jets. And I'm not sure, like, was there any tension happening? I know that there was some, but I didn't think it was like the type of tension where he'd have to be released and they'd have to eat all that money.
He's a terrible locker room guy. That should tell you all that you need to know about Le'Veon Bell. And that's the one thing that scares me the most.
How do you know he's a terrible locker room guy? Just because he's a rapper?
No, not that. If we made that stereotype, then Bezo would have been a terrible locker room guy. he bitched and moaned his way out of Pittsburgh to get more money. Obviously, he's not in a great system, but he hasn't produced worth shit. I forgot who it was. Someone who has a blue check mark and wears a suit on their Twitter picture. And they basically said, like, watching Le'Veon Bell on Sunday, like, it's like taking a nap. Like, in certain situations, in certain offenses, you become obsolete. Now, in our offense, do I think he would be a good fit schematically? Absolutely. Do I question where he's at mentally and just kind of like how he would mesh with this locker room? Yes. That's like where I'm at with all of it.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like with the where there's smoke, there's fire thing. But I haven't heard anything like Antonio Brown type forces. It wasn't that situation.
No one
he was tired
be as bad as him.
I mean, but he was thinking like he was like tired of getting franchise tagged and he wanted a long-term contract. And I know that he kind of like shit the bet on that one, but we did see what just happened with Dak Prescott, like for being an honorable teammate and playing on the franchise tag. So I'm not going to kill him entirely for that. Like, I didn't hear anything crazy come out of Jets camp or Pittsburgh's camp about Le'Veon Bell. You know what I mean? But there is
still like has value though. So like for him to just get shit canned on his day off,
that's why I'm asking. Sense. Like, it's weird. You know what I mean? But maybe the Jets are just kind of like, we're moving forward. I'm sure he's not the greatest teammate. He might be like a Jay Cutler type situation where there's questions on either side. There's guys that are advocate for him and guys that won't. But go ahead, Duke.
So I mean, I don't know if you guys are aware, but really what kind of kicked off this whole situation was honestly a day or two after Le'Veon Bell was signed, like originally.
Yeah.
Adam Gase came out and made the comment about how he wasn't really kind of the one that wanted that, you know. So I think there was just tension from the very beginning. You know, I used to kind of have a really similar idea about Le'Veon Bell as Bedon does, you know, kind of seeing how that all played out in Pittsburgh, you know, that mixed with Antonio Brown essentially happening in the same offseason. You know, shout out to Urinating Tree. If you guys ever want a nice breakdown of that whole situation from a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, that's the place to go on YouTube. Hilarious kind of commentary about it, but it really just kind of points that entire locker room was just getting split in three different directions. So it was really kind of hard to gauge who was right and who was wrong. But from what I gathered of everything, Le'Veon was the guy that kind of was more in the Big Ben camp. And that's kind of the camp that I feel like looked the best coming out of all that drama coming out of Pittsburgh, you know, in a kind of a revisionist sense. So I really don't think he's necessarily a locker room cancer as much as it is. He never really felt welcome with the Jets. There was points in that first season where he essentially really had to carry the offense. And I just don't think that was something he was used to when he had, you know, the other two killer bees in Pittsburgh to kind of pick up the load. So
after Darnold went out, dude, they overused the shit out of him. He took so many hits. Like, I remember watching just like, man, this guy's getting clocked and he just keeps getting back up and going after it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, dude. And he was never used to that. You know, that's something that he definitely saw a little bit at Michigan State. But when he, as long as he'd been in the NFL, he had Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown to pick up the slack. Did not have that in New York. So that's where I really think he struggled. I made a tweet about it like a couple hours ago that I think kind of nailed it. You know, obviously just promoting my own tweet. But like, I just really think if you put him around playmakers, that's where he thrives, you know, and obviously, you know, that can be said about anybody, but he shows that when there are guys who are threats on the field and they're not paying fully attention to Le'Veon, that's when he's at his best.
He can do work against light boxes. There's no doubt about that. And with someone like Big Ben, who I think is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in our lifetime, like I think he shits on like the Matt Ryan type franchise quarterback. I think he's much more solid than those types of guys. And those guys are solid, but go ahead, Bedon.
They know on Sunday that they can go out and Big Ben can throw it 40, 50 times and they'll still be in the game.
If like they Big need Ben him to plays, throw, he can, yeah.
Yeah, like Big Ben, he can be more of that traditional quarterback, but Big Ben gives me more of like backyard brawl type quarterback, and he just makes shit work and has throughout his career. And even as he gets older and less mobile, he's still effective. Obviously, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Chase Claypool had 4 touchdowns. 3 of those were through the air. So obviously, Big Ben had to get it to him. But I think what it really comes down to with Le'Veon Bell is the money, obviously, first and foremost. And he's going to want a lot. And the thing is he's probably going to want a secure long-term deal. So that could play into it. And another thing is, too, is like if you go out and sign a guy like Le'Veon Bell after all the stock that you've put into David Montgomery, I know that would just motivate Montgomery, but I think that's just kind of a shitbag move.
Yeah, I'm glad you got us back on track because I think that's the big thing. It comes down to money. Brandon, you fucking killed it this whole segment because you talked about how he'd be a schematic fit, which I think he would be very good. And I think he would add a compliment that, while David Montgomery is, you know, we saw him fight for that touchdown in Tampa Bay when he wasn't getting anything. We see him break a lot of tackles, but I think that Le'Veon Bell is a bit more downhill in one cut. And I think he can get a lot more of those kind of Jordan Howard type yards, but also has the upside of the receiving ability that Matt Nagy wants. So fit wise, I think it would be a really good fit. But do we use our running backs enough, first and foremost? I mean, I think we'd all rather see Le'Veon Bell take carries than Cordarrelle Patterson at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a pretty much a given, but it really comes down to the money. You know what I mean? The money and the utilization. Like, I don't want David Montgomery getting 8 of his 16 carries taken away. You know what I mean? Like,
at this point, I'd rather see them give carries to that jag off that said Cordarrelle Patterson would be our number one than to Cordarrelle Patterson.
No, but wow.
Just putting that out there.
No, yeah, but I think it comes down to the money. If he's willing to take like a $2.5 million deal to play for the year, sure. But he's shown that he's willing to hold out before. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think he does want a longer deal. But at the end of the day, like, he might take less money in a 1-year deal because he already got paid that whatever it was, 25 guaranteed from the Jets.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of what I was thinking too, that I think that's the only realistic chance the Bears end up getting him is on a 1-year prove it deal where he wants to go to a team that's going to win, go to a team where he could possibly get a playoff game or two in there, you know, even if they don't, you know, contend for a Super Bowl. I think that's really kind of where he's going to base his idea, and he's going to try to cash in from that. And it's going to be his last big deal. You know, I think Le'Veon Bell, you know, especially with sitting that year out, it kind of keeps miles off of him. You know, I think he's a guy that can actually play pretty decent, you know, into his early 30s, you know, kind of be a situational guy like that. But, you know, scheme fit 100%, guys. I agree with that, but I don't know. It's as great as it all sounds, and as much as we've hyped it up, it still kind of feels like a little bit of a pipe dream. You know what I mean?
It just seems a little bit far-fetched. Yeah, I know. It seems I would be fully open arms to it, but if they're like, hey, we're going to give him $9 million and take away from, you know, the money that we could roll over next year to help get us a fucking bona fide left tackle, like, I prefer we just kind of stick with what we got right now.
I think the best point that you made, though, is like Le'Veon being as smart as he is with football, he probably does realize how he could help the Bears and take them to that next level. But there is just so much other stuff other than just us. Like, it's not Madden. We can't just like pick and pull him, turn the salary cap off and put him on the team. Like, there's a lot more other stuff that goes into it, and there's definitely other teams that will probably have higher offers. So
yeah, I know Twitter is a wild place, but like the Facebook posts that you see about people proposing trades are just like, bro, are you like, are
they're
you
like fantasy football trades?
But like
no Vaseline, bro. You're not gonna.
Yeah, exactly. Complete like trade. Just taking advantage of people. I'm just like, wait a second. Like, it's not Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien got fired. Wait, like, we're not going to be able to pull that off.
This is real life. You can't turn the sliders off.
Not every guy is Bill O'Brien.
Sliders guy. On the topic of fantasy football, you didn't tell the world how you put your meat on the table on Monday night.
Me personally?
Yeah, with your fantasy play, because, I mean, Josh Allen didn't look too good tonight, and you made a very big waiver wire pickup last night.
Yeah, I grabbed Justin Herbert. I mean, dude, I don't know what's wrong with me and Josh Allen. Maybe I got Dukes, like, rubbing off on me, but I've started Mitchell Trubisky over Josh Allen twice. Big, big time mistake. And I've started Justin Herbert over Josh Allen as well. And I think Teddy Bridgewater. So I've started Josh Allen 1 out of 5 weeks. And I got him in the 15th round.
Cannot start Mr. Theodore this weekend. Otherwise, that's blood money.
No, but no, absolutely not. I'll never emotionally hedge. I double down. I double down every single time. I either want to be completely miserable or on top of the world. There's no in the middle.
Double down and die with the team, or, yeah, you can't live with the result.
There's no emotional hedging. No emotional hedging. I either want it all or I get nothing. But I just, like, real quick, another name that has popped up is AJ Green. I think he would be a great compliment. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think I'd give up more than a 5th round pick for him. You guys, would you give up anything earlier than a 5th round pick for him?
Yeah, I don't think so.
You'd also have to work the money around too, because I'm not trying to pay him like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, dude. Like, I love AJ Green when he's healthy too. I think that's kind of my biggest hold up with it, is he just has not proven he could stay healthy for an entire season. Because he is absolutely dominant when he can, but yeah, I wouldn't give up much. It would be a very, very high risk kind of trade to give up anything more than like a 5th or a 6th, or maybe a high upside player that we have just chilling, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. And you'd have to rework the money. There's no way you can, cause then A-Rob sits out. He's like, wait, you're going to bring this guy over on this contract and pay
him. I think regardless, if we bring in AJ Green, A-Rob's going to throw a fit.
Yeah. And I just, I think the health thing is possibly because he was like, okay, I've been on the Bengals for way too long. Like every time I have a chance to milk an injury, I'm going to, because you see it like when he's out there, he's making business decisions. He's not willing to, before he used to go up and get the ball when there was a little bit of a hope with the Red Rocket and Red Rifle, whatever they call him. Where there's smoke, there's fire, baby.
Red Rocket got shoved into the game, and he's going to be the quarterback moving forward for the Dallas Cowboys. So let's see what he's got.
He actually threw up a nice couple balls, and Gallup was coming down with them. But let's move forward to this
preview. Wait. Real quick. AJ Green. I don't know. I don't like it. And honestly, like, if I'm the Bears, they need to trend more in the direction of a speedy receiver that can take the top off the defense, because as much as this might be like the third or fourth one this year, and we're 4-1, which is crazy to say, but Anthony Miller and that project does not look like it's turning out. And the Bears need to be able to have a defense that can complement Allen Robinson, can be, you know, the Magic City to his J.R. Smith, that can take the top off the defense, that can beat any corner that's put in front of him. You feel me? Like, it's not too often that we have a guy like Allen Robinson who can make the things that he does happen after the catch. We want someone that doesn't even get the contact. We want like a guy that's like Tyreek Hill fast, that can just beat DBs straight up with their speed. And obviously that guy could be Mooney. That's still determined, but
yeah, still to I be mean, seen, I think we but, should. We should pump the brakes on building the offense around A-Rob until he decides not to get a fucking ball ripped out of his hands for a consecutive.
Yeah, and we won't talk about that, but there.
Well, I just talked about it, but at the end of the day,
we'll say realistically, there's three of them this year. But yeah, next, just so I don't get fired.
3-5 games. 3-5 games. 60%. Still love you, A-Rob, but I'm just saying it's not looking good for your case on this like big money extension when you keep getting the ball ripped out of your hands.
Well, look at PFF ratings. I think he's the third ranked receiver.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
not going to waste my time with PFF ratings. So,
well, yeah, let's move forward into this Panthers matchup, because surprisingly, the Panthers are still efficient on offense. I mean, they are in the tops of the league. They're actually the 7th ranked offense in the league right now, and they're averaging just under 400 yards a game. They're able to still run the ball. Mike Davis, revenge game real quick. Have you gotten any word? Like, Christian McCaffrey was slotted to come back this week, but are they going to rush him back, or are they still okay because Mike Davis is killing it?
Yeah, I haven't really heard anything go crazy about McCaffrey. I don't think they're going to be rushing him back necessarily, especially against Bears defense like this. So, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I wouldn't bet on it. I would assume they're going to stick with what's going on with Mike Davis and kind of stick with the attack they have with Teddy Bridgewater through the air, man. Panthers have speed on the outside with their receivers.
Yeah, they really do. I go ahead, B-Don.
This offense kind of reminds me of the type of offense that Bridgewater ran at Louisville and what he had in Minnesota, where he can kind of just be a point guard. He can literally just be a quarterback. He's comfortable in the pocket, but I saw him move with his legs quite a few times in less than ideal situations, like on the goal line and stuff, where you want to try and execute either, you know, with your running backs or with your tight ends and stuff. But, you know, if you get your quarterback out in space and he can make something happen, and Bridgewater still does have a little bit of speed left in him, he can definitely do that. But like you said, Duke, like, they have quality receivers. DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and Curtis Samuel are all three of those type of receivers that I was just talking about that can take the top off of defense. And our DBs are definitely going to have a busy day. And then, like you said, with the absence of Christian McCaffrey, and Lucas, you took the words right out of my mouth, Mike Davis is going to be hungry out there on Sunday. If you're gambling, guys, I would, unless, you know, you're against blood money, I would assume that he's going to find the end zone one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, okay, Christian McCaffrey, we don't know the status on yet, but that's scary if he's in the game, because our rushing defense has not proven to be very good over the first 5 weeks
Or Trevathan covering him out of the backfield.
Hold up now. Trevathan, I think, in my opinion, has gotten better every single week. So I'm done with the Channing Trevathan slander. I think he is fully back. I think he's coming up and meeting fucking people at the hole. He's shedding linebackers well. I think he's got his legs back. So I'm done with the Danny Trevathan slander. Won't happen at Bears on Tap. You hear that, B-Don?
Thank you. The effort never happens.
Danny T is that dog.
We'll see it out here this week.
Of course. Do I want him or any linebacker covering Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield? Absolutely not. But I'm done with the Danny Trevathan slander. He's got his fucking legs back. The old dog has got to put Cordarrelle out there to fucking cover him. I mean, he is the Swiss Army knife. No, yeah. But at the end of the day, our rushing defense has not been great. And I can't stress enough how much we feel this Eddie Goldman loss. Like, it's rough. And I think that the solution realistically is activating McCullers. I mean, due to 6'7", 300 something pounds, like Akeem Hicks was taking a lot of that, taking on double team shit. I don't want him to do that. He's not going to be as much of an impact player inside. He makes a lot more plays on the outside, on the edge. Realistically, that's where Akeem Hicks needs to be. And also just for his durability. Dude had a rough elbow injury. Like, I don't want him sitting there taking up nose tackle responsibilities. And I felt like we saw him do that a little bit last week. And I prefer that we just go get a big space eater that's not going to make any plays. Go ahead, Duke.
We'll see. I can get down with that point of having a big guy up front. And the loss of Eddie Goldman has been way bigger than a lot of people, a lot of blog boys decided it was going to be. But, you know, I think all of us on Tap kind of knew how big that was going to be.
You know who actually...
I know exactly.
It's the CP3 guy. The CP3 guy is the one that fucking said that he was the least important fucking part of our defense.
I slaughtered him for that. Like, I, whatever. But
that guy literally just throws his fucking his takes on ice with his beers, bro. Straight. Dude,
he literally just throws shit at a wall, waiting for something to stick, and usually nothing sticks. So, yeah, man. See, I really liked our linebackers matchup in this game. I feel like we're going to have an easier time kind of keeping our linebackers inside to work against the run. Because with Greg Olsen not being on this team anymore, they really don't have a threat at tight end. So that's something where the linebackers are really only going to have to worry about the running back out of the backfield. So, yeah, obviously, if McCaffrey's going to be in there, that's going to be something to worry about. But I don't think we're going to have to worry as much about having to cover a tight end with our linebackers. And I don't think we're going to have to worry as much about keeping a safety up to work on those linebackers. We're probably going to try to keep our linebackers in the middle of the field. You know, obviously, for anything, you know, that routes that might go through with a DJ Moore or a Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel's pretty good in the slot as well. But I don't see our safety staying up very much. I see us kind of staying back and letting a guy like Bridgewater kind of try to beat our secondary. And I feel like we're actually going to have a good run defense this week. I really feel kind of confident in it. Cause I really, anytime we have a tight end we have to deal with, I feel like that's kind of where we start seeing leakage, but I don't really feel confident about any tight end on the Carolina Panthers roster.
Yeah, and realistically, you talk about, like, because all of them could run from the slot, and I think we're going to primarily see Robbie Anderson and Samuel running from the slot. But realistically, like, I'm so confident in, but like, we have a great defensive backfield, and I'm the most confident in Buster Skrine. I know that his, you know, pass breakups isn't up there with Jalen Johnson and stuff like that, but in my opinion, he has gotten taken advantage of the least in our defensive backfield. So I'm not worried about whoever's running from the slot. I'm more so worried about the speed on the outside, specifically Jalen Johnson. I'm worried about the big play because, like you said, Teddy Bridgewater could extend plays and he can make things happen. Jalen Johnson is the type of press corner that has been playing really well. But like we have said on multiple occasions, he's going to take his losses too. The kid's a rookie, playing really well. For a rookie, no doubt about it. He's at the tops of the league right now as a rookie. And it's awesome to see. I think he's got a promising future with us as a number one corner. We're not going to have to re-up on a Kyle Fuller type thing.
Breaking news, Lucas Perfetti hates Jalen Johnson and thinks he's playing terrible.
No, but I just think realistically, if a play gets extended, he can, you know, because he's such a press physical corner, like if someone gets that separation and gets behind him, it could be a huge play. And that's where I think that's what Carolina's going to live on, because right now we're kind of matched up strength against strength and weakness against weakness. Now, our offense obviously hasn't produced that well, but when Nick Foles gets hot, things can happen realistically. It's very evident that the Carolina Panthers are lacking on defense. They have a really, really terrible third down defense. I think the second worst in the league, giving up like 60% on third down. And their DVOA, I think, is second to last in the league as well, or in the bottom five. So there should be some opportunities to score points. And I think our defense should be able to handle their offense as good as they can be.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing this weekend, at least for the Bears, it goes a little understated, is the ability for Trevathan and Roquan to attack Smith because he's not that type of running back like Ronald Jones, where he's going to outrun the defense. He is more of a guy that's going to run through the defense. So there can be no missed tackles. We need gang tackling. We need that front seven to play a solid game, because if the Panthers do elect to go run heavy and they're successful with it early and we can't stop the bleeding, like, they're going to be able to take anything they want on that defense. So we need to come out strong against the rush and make Teddy Bridgewater, I know I say it often, but Teddy Bridgewater, while I do think he is a good quarterback in certain systems, as Lucas would say, he's not a world beater. He's not the best quarterback in the league, but he can definitely get the job done. I just feel like throughout the course of a game, I like our matchup against the receivers with our secondary. And it's going to, like, the X factor is going to be how we defend Mike Davis and Teddy Bridgewater on those quarterback extended runs.
Yeah, Mike Davis has nowhere near as much burst, but he's a fucking load. You know what I mean? And
Roquan, he's a bowling ball, yeah.
Roquan Smith. Gotta fucking wrap up this week. Gotta wrap up, because you missed a few big tackles in the hole. And like you said, he doesn't have as much burst as Ronald Jones, so it should be easier. Like, the bounce off from Roquan Smith, I feel like, could be recovered by the defense a little bit better, because seemed like there was a couple times where Roquan bounced off and Ronald Jones was just absolutely gone. But then again, too, Matt Rhule, in my opinion, like you said, he's smart enough to know if this running game's working, we're going to stick with it. Like, that, our points come sporadically here.
I've watched enough Baylor football to know that he will rock with the run until the end of the game if it's working.
Absolutely, dude. I saw it plenty. Whenever Texas played him, for sure. yeah, I mean, I kind of echo a lot of the stuff you guys are saying. The biggest thing I'm kind of looking at is their defense right now. I know, Lucas, you said they are definitely lacking a little bit. The biggest spot I'd say that they're lacking is in their secondary, but I will make a point to say that they do have some guys that can get after the quarterback, and a guy in Quan Short and Brian Burns specifically. Two guys that are actually going to be coming into this game questionable, though. So that will be something to kind of pay attention to when we discuss the injury report later in the week. But I mean, their inside linebackers, Shaq Thompson, Tahir Whitehead, we saw plenty of him in Detroit, and Jeremy Chinn, they've kind of been using him similar to kind of how we've been using Deion Bush when he's been healthy, kind of as that sub linebacker / in the box safety. And they've been getting a lot of success out of it. Jeremy Chin's been eating up tackles this year. He's been kind of all over the field. He's a guy that we're going to have to pay attention to whenever we want to go to a guy like Jimmy Graham over the middle, or really any situation like that. He can also play the flats pretty well. So that's going to kind of be their X factor on defense. But besides that, dude, their secondary is very beatable. You know, Dante Jackson, Eli Apple's on the secondary, and he's out, and he's still somehow on a depth chart, because I think Eli Apple's absolute garbage.
You jag off. That was going to be my guy on their roster. That was my beat on guy of the week. Even though he's like 3 years in the league, he just sucks and I hate him.
Oh, dude, I cannot stand Eli Apple. And then they got Trey Boston as like one of their deep guys in the secondary. Like, there's not a lot in the secondary that I'm scared of. I really think Jeremy Chin's going to be the biggest one. And even then, he can't cover A-Rob.
Yeah, Trey Boston's a good, he's a nice complement to your secondary. He should not be the foundation. So like you said, there are some spots there, but Matt Rhule is smart enough to know exactly what he's got on defense, and they're only letting up 24.5 points a game. So they're kind of like that bend, don't break type of team. But they're susceptible to letting up some yards and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, like, the Bears are going to actually have their work cut out for them. When we look at the schedule, that's why I hate schedule predictions, because you look at it at the beginning of the year and you're like, Carolina's going through a rebuild. This is going to be an easy walkover team. Hopefully we have 3 or 4 wins by then. And that's not the case this year. Matt Rhule in a rebuild year, 3-2, man, 3-2. They came out to a rocky start and now they're starting to find their groove. And they're playing really well on offense. So it's definitely a team. It's not a pushover, man. It's not a pushover.
It's another seeding type game, though, similar to like the Bucks. Like, we'll probably have a similar record to them towards the end of the season. So it's definitely important in that aspect, too.
Yeah, they kind of remind me of like a poor man's Colts. Like, they're not going to beat themselves by any means. They're going to make you beat them for sure.
Yeah, just with a far weaker secondary. But yeah, that was kind of the one I thought of was, we just like we said, we couldn't take the Colts lightly. We cannot take the Panthers lightly at all. You know, I think it was less of a rebuild and more of a retool. Because, I mean, I still think you have a foundation for the most part. Obviously, you lose guys like Kuechly, Olsen, Newton, you know what I mean? And fire Ron Rivera. That's huge. But those three guys were guys that were having hard time staying on the field as it was. It was something that it kind of felt like they were holding on to it for as long as they could. Obviously, Cam's balling out in New England, you know, big shout out to Cam Newton. But, outside of that, it kind of seemed like bringing in Teddy Bridgewater, bringing in Robbie Anderson was massive. And, I just never understood how he's been as underrated as he is, because that guy is absolutely electric on a streak. Like,
yeah, but he has trouble staying healthy too.
Yeah, and
he was also with the Jets, right? Like with the Jets, how are you gonna get much play with the Jets? It's kind of tough.
Yeah, it was a guy that I kind of had the Bears slotted in, at least kind of toss our hat into the ring when he was in free agency. But I mean, it is what it is. DJ Moore is also a weapon as well, so that's something we're really gonna have to pay attention to. I think that's
why they run the ball so well, man, because they have three guys that could stretch the fuck out of the field, and you have to be aware of that. You can't let them take the top off of you.
Well, dude, and I'm honestly surprised looking at the stat sheet that DJ Moore doesn't have a rushing attempt this year, because he's an end-around guy, and he's a guy that when he hits and he gets a seam, he's gone. I've seen, like, we saw it happen his rookie year. We saw it happen quite a bit last year. Like, he's a guy that can definitely be dangerous. He's kind of that, Swiss Army knife, but he also produces on the receiving stat sheet as well.
Why are you taking shots at my guy, Cordero, man? There's nothing.
I'm not even taking shots.
It was a little backhanded. Come on now.
Cordero Patterson, I love you, my dude. You're the man.
Dude, first of all, I half of me hates how he just takes the ball from, it's one thing if you're like middle of the end zone, but I feel like his feet are on the back line of the end zone and he still takes it out. And don't get me wrong, sometimes he gets us to like the 35 and I feel like it's in critical moments when he does it. But at the end of the day, my favorite thing about Cordero Patterson is just how he always is a fucking goof after they win. And he always says, about them Bears.
About them Bears.
I love it, dude. CP3's got a spot on this team, and he's the best gunner in the fucking league. No doubt about it. He's the best special teams player in the league, hands down.
Quick note.
Shout out Taysom Hill. Fuck you.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had a really big.
Taysom Hill with a big time touchdown last night.
That wheel route was huge too by Cordero, man. That put us into scoring position on our first touchdown. Like, that was big. Yeah, he is a load too. Like, when you get him, like when he gets into open space, he's a fucking load. He's pushing it forward for sure. No DB is going to stand him up.
And 6'4", 230. Oh, there's not too many people on the football field that are going to stand him up when he's going full speed. But one guy that I really do want to highlight on this Carolina Panthers defense, and Duke brought him up, you know, briefly, is Shaq Thompson. That's a guy who kind of came in and filled the shoes of a guy like Luke Kuechly, who is very hard shoes to fill, but the guy is definitely holding his own, not to the level of Kuechly, but someone that should be definitely keyed in on Sunday.
And he's circled on the whiteboard right now, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely think that's like their number one defensive player, however, which way you want to cut it. But like we saw in the draft process and how we have seen the innovative ways that Matt Rhule is using Jeremy Chinn, it reminds you of a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, or like you said, Deion Bush, or even the first rounder that went to the Cardinals, Isaiah Simmons. These hybrid safeties that can come in and play in the box and bang with the best of them. And just looking at their regular depth chart, he's second string at safety and was able to get nab himself, you know, a starting spot at the linebacker position out of Southern Illinois. So hats off to him. He's definitely a baller.
Dude, yeah.
I was super high on Jeremy Chinn coming out of the draft, like really freaking high. Like I really wanted him.
A lot of people wanted him on the Bears for sure.
I like Bronny Jr.
but no, realistically, they ball. They have a solid team. They got a lot of players, like you said, Duke. The best option is going to be to try to air it out against this defensive backfield, but the front seven could get to him. And I think teams are going to learn not to all out blitz Nick Foles because he's going to find the open guy. That's one thing he's going to be able to do. But at the end of the day, that about wraps it up for this episode. Next episode in a couple days, we're going to have the injury report, do a little bit more detailed breakdown as well, have our score predictions, bold predictions, all that good stuff. So be sure to tune in. We're Bears on Tap. Go ahead and follow us at Bears on Tap or follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. You could follow me at Lucas Perfetti, 46. And you could also follow Duke Coughlin at That Pod Guy Duke and Brandon Suarez at Beatdown 300. If you guys have Apple, please go ahead and rate and review us. You know, we're also going to have fan questions, stuff like that. So be on the lookout for that on our next show. And we're trying to get to 5-1, baby. Bear down.